Hello and welcome to IT Conversations. I'm your host, Doug Kay, and today we have a recorded session from BloggerCon 3 held at Stanford University on November 6, 2004. This session is on podcasting, and the session leader is Adam Curry.
Good morning, everybody. Howdy. Can you hear me okay? It's working all right? Could be a little bit louder if someone could turn that up a bit. It's 9 o'clock exactly, and that means we're starting with the podcasting session. My name's Adam Curry. It's great to see everybody here. And from where I'm... thank you, Dave. from where I'm standing, the ratio Apple to Windows is just an amazing sight to see this. I want to thank Dave right off the bat. We've been working really intensely for the past, ever since podcasting started, you know, so a couple weeks now. While he's been working with me and we've been doing all this stuff together, he's also, producing a conference, which is an incredibly big deal to pull off, and the smoothness of it all is just excellent. And of course, Dave will credit all the people who've helped him put this together. So, podcasting. First thing I thought we should do is just do our regular check on Google. Hold on, if I could spell Google. And hold on a sec. I had to split up my my Mac. No longer has a net connection. So, oops. Yeah, Google still doesn't understand it. Did you mean broadcasting? Meanwhile, 191,000 hits for podcasting. So, now actually they're. We do have a definition on iPodder.org, which I'll just leave up there, because it's a little bit confusing. You know, what is podcasting? Is it something that just started with iPods or with MP3 players? Or this definition, I think, really says it all, which means it can be perhaps a lot broader than what we're doing today. I wanted to give you a little bit of history of the past couple of months about how this came to be and some of the things that happened, and show you that it really was very simple because it was just a matter of users and developers. I say users and developers partying together and coming up with amazing stuff. Are there developers in the room who consider themselves to be real developers? Okay, good. Welcome, welcome to the party. Glad to have you here. Five years ago, Dave and I conceived an idea of how to distribute media files through the web. And you know, we could go into all kinds of technical details about that. I don't think this room is going to want to do that just now, or maybe later on, we'll see. But it was relatively simple, and was built on top of protocols and formats that Dave had already invented or were already being used, and it used weblog infrastructure. And it was just that. It was time-shifting an MP3 file or a video file so that it would kind of come into my computer if he sent one to me, and it would just be there when I woke up and said, you know, what's new, and vice versa. And we did that for about 4 years. We sent each other little clips, and we'd post about it and say, oh, isn't this cool? And yeah. When everybody uses it, it'll be really cool. Now, there have been MP3 files that people have been putting on the web for years and years and years. Shows, dramas, documentaries, stuff that is coming from traditional radio. It's been around. The problem that I always had, because I was listening to Dave's morning coffee notes, which he went from kind of the text version to the audio version for a while, and I really liked it. But it wasn't very clear if I just looked at scripting news, okay, where's the file, and you know, I might look over it and might not understand that was something that I wanted to get. And quite honestly, I didn't want to sit and click and download and have stuff, you know, wait until it comes in, play it on my computer. And I would usually, you know, drag it over to my iPod and use it on the commute or, you know, going shopping or whatever, or when I just wanted to tune out my 14-year-old daughter's songs. And I wanted to have that happen automatically because it was just a laborious process, and I would miss stuff, and I just wouldn't be current with whatever he was doing. Also, Dave at the time, which was the first BloggerCon, I think, was working with Chris Lydon. Is Chris here? I don't think he is. Chris was doing interviews, and Dave was putting those in this distribution system, which is based on RSS, and that was cool. You know, I get all these interviews automatically on my. I wanted them automatically on my iPod, and I actually looked around for people to help me do this. I'm not a programmer. I don't feel like a programmer. In fact, the first BloggerCon, I asked a couple people here if you know they could help me out, and wound up actually Marcus Mahler, who I pay to watch my servers and stuff, and he developed some stuff for me. He actually built what I would say the first iPodder in Radio User Land. Radio User Land, if you're not familiar with it, is it's much more than a web blogging tool, but it is an aggregator that understands how to get enclosures, which is the basis of podcasts. And he created a little script that literally would update my iPod with whatever came in. Didn't work very well. That was the problem. It was unreliable for a whole bunch of issues, one of which is the way radio downloads. It didn't work entirely well. And I couldn't get anyone to help me figure this out. And I saw all the bits. I knew that everything was in place. And if I could just tie them together, I could probably make it happen. So I took about a month. And I'll just show this to you, because I thought you might appreciate it. It's much less of a big deal than you might think. And I wrote basically, you know, a page and a half of text. This is AppleScript. I'd already learned a bit of UserTalk, which is Radio User Land and Frontier's scripting language. And you'll see in here, literally, you know, it was all copy-paste. You know, I went out to Google and I said, RSS, AppleScript. And it came back, and it gave me all these great examples of stuff that people were doing with AppleScript and RSS, which wasn't very much, actually. But there was a lot of iPod stuff, and I learned that you can talk to, you know, with iTunes and your iPod, and there's all these things in there. And you'll see that, literally, as I copy and pasted stuff, I came up with, you know, this is really my code, and, you know, here's finished parsing, and I called stuff like enclosure sucker. But the big deal is down at the bottom of the page, where it says copy to iTunes, and that was really the big deal for me. When it was done, and I just called it iPodder because that's the name I come up with, which commercially doesn't really make sense, but it stuck. I was really happy, but it really really sucked. It was it's the worst program I've ever used, and of course because I don't know how to do this. Really, and please, it's still available. Download it and see how bad it sucks. You know, it just breaks all over the place. And but I put it out and said, this sucks. Can anyone please improve it for me? Help me. And that's when it started. And that's when, I think, for me at least, the connect of users and developers happened, where I put out a little more initiative than just saying, hey, make this for me, because I found out that asking programmers or developers to make something for you is like, you know, asking them to do your homework. It just doesn't work that way. And from here, it just grew this incredible, based on a Yahoo Groups mailing list, I might add, this incredible community of users and developers having a conversation with no hidden agenda. The only agenda was, we want to make this easier, we want to make it cool, we want to have a lot of fun while we're doing this. And I think that a real nice part of all that is that the developers are also podcasters. They're not just making code. Of those developers who raise their hands, someone doing a podcast, I hope? You can raise a little bit higher. So that's just a brief history of how we got here, and then what happened from there is it's just like weblogs. You know, you can read weblogs, you can, there's all kinds of, we all know more or less what weblogs bring to us, but I think one of the beauties about weblogs is you can create your own at any time, and you can participate. And this, with what we've created here, anybody can basically create a podcast. And the definition of a podcast or of a program, really anyone can do that as long as you have a computer that at least has a built-in microphone. From there, you can really branch out and do some really fancy stuff. Now, I'm not quite sure what, I've heard a couple things about what you came to this session to find out about. The only thing I really have set in my mind is that I think a lot of people want to see how I do a podcast, which may be different from the way you're doing it. But if anyone has a direction you'd like to go right now, just let me know so that we can get a mic to you and go down that path. Otherwise, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want to do. Just wait until the mic comes up. And please let us know who you are, URL or podcast.
Hi, I love your show. I listen to it all the time. My name is Donovan Watts. I work for the National Radio Project, and they put out a weekly show called Making Contact. It's a 30-minute audio documentary, radioproject.org, and it's just perfect for podcasting. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. So recently I started podcasting, and a Whole Wheat Radio picked us up and without my even saying anything. So I'm pretty excited about the potential. But we have two audiences. One are the listeners with the iPods and the listening devices. But the other people I'm interested in getting a hold of are the stations. You know, every week we send out hundreds of CDs, and I want to eliminate that. So, you know, what I have a real interest in is how to get these stations to get on board and how to make it easy for them to get the show.
Okay, if I understand your question correctly, is how can you use, podcasting as a syndication method for traditional broadcast. Okay, well, Tony, do you want to jump in here? Because you are quite familiar with traditional radio. We got a microphone coming down here to Tony, please. Oh, there you go. Tony Khan is a legend in the public, well, not just public radio, but in radio in general. Look up his CV on the web, and he currently has a podcast of morning stories. Also on WGBH and in the podcast.
That's the surest way to shut me up. Call me a legend. I guess I've said it all already, and I have no idea what I said. So, the main problem in trying to get anything from the outside into broadcasting is the same problem that you face in any line of work, from being in the Pentagon to being a camel trader in a bazaar, and that is you got to know somebody. It's all personal, and you've got to persuade them that what you have really is essential to their well-being, happiness. It may be the preservation of their job. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge problem. It's got nothing at all to do with the quality or the content of your show. And I think an enormous amount of energy can be misspent trying to get what you've got that's original and fresh into a medium like broadcasting, which already has its own ideas about what it wants to do. And I'm here because I believe that all that time, energy, and sense of fun is better spent trying to create a market and an environment and a climate for new ideas that is different from broadcasting, so that broadcasting as a whole can start to come and say, geez, we got something to learn from you guys. You are essential to our survival now. So what was that show you were doing? I think if we build community here and we build new ideas and we appreciate the fact that the main difference between what's happening here and what's happening in broadcasting is that this movement is young, it's supple, it's fresh, it's about partying and about having fun a lot more than it's about making money and keeping your job. Those qualities are rare. They don't last terribly long anywhere. Make sure you hold on to that and make sure you get to express. Your show, Adam, for instance, is creating a new form. Every podcast I've heard is creating a new form. Dawn and Drew is a new form. They would never, never come out of public broadcasting.
I thought the Mile High thing was
the hits. They would never be allowed in the bathroom, probably, at WGBH. But it's real important to remember that the hits are going to come from the bottom up, from the outside in. No programmer knows how to make a hit. But they think that's their job, so they will listen to the wrong things. So I don't want to repeat myself, but I guess I am. Try not to spend too much time getting into broadcasting if you think of yourself as a podcaster. If you think of yourself as a podcaster, figure out what is really special and different about podcasting, and then get broadcasting to salivate about it.
Right. It's a... what Tony's saying here is one of the big things that I really love about what we're doing is exactly that. It's fun. You know, you can hear the this. I've been in radio since I was 15, and there's all these rules. You know, there's all these ways that you kind of do stuff, and it's time is definitely money. No matter if you're public radio or not, you know, every minute is accounted for, and my wife, who I've been with for 17 years now, in the early days of my career, I would be on radio and television, and if I would flub a line, and you know they don't always let you redo stuff, you know, the director makes a decision, says, no, we're not going to do that over, because my shots were great, fuck whatever you said. I don't like television, that's one of many reasons. But I would be really upset, and then we're talking 85, and I'd sit home going, oh, fuck, I fucked up that line. And she said, no, man, that was the best part. So you became human for like a nanosecond. And that's exactly what it is. You can hear the humanity. You can hear it all coming through. Dawn and Drew are both here, right? Just, where are you guys sitting? Stand up for a second. Can we get a microphone up? Now, despite what you've heard, Dawn and I have no relationship of sexual nature. I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Yet. Andrew. what I'd like to hear from you guys is what got you started. I think I can kind of feel that Drew is clearly the producer, and he's driving Dawn in a way. But you know, if maybe you could just tell us how you fell into this and why you've been doing it every single day and why you keep doing it and just your feelings about that.
Well, sure.
Yeah, you're not allowed to hold the mic.
Oh, all right, sorry. I've just been into the internet and blogging and all that stuff for years now, and I'm actually friends with Pete Rasterweb, and he's the guy that kind of just pushed me into it. You know, and one weekend he was like, "You better put something out, or else some wisecrack." And so I did, and it was real stupid. And so Dawn heard it, and I just kind of like, we're a team, and she's the talent. I'm just the tech, and it's just been it's just been crazy. It's just been fun. Just been having a blast.
Dawn, is that really the way it happened?
Yeah, his first podcast was so nerdy, I couldn't even take it. And I was like, wait a second, this sounds like a cool way for me to rant and people can listen. And so I kind of mooched in on his thing. So.
She's always been the talent.
Sorry?
She's always been the talent. I've just always looked for the vehicle to put her out there.
He's making me blush.
Last night's show shit.
is it hard to get up the energy to do a show every single day?
Sometimes I just can't do it. I'm just too tired. But I don't know. We don't do it every day anymore because I was getting kind of burnt out. And you can only say, like, fuck and shit so many times in a night before it becomes, Tune in.
What are you coming looking for from the podcasting session? Is there anything that's the top of your mind?
I just wanted to since we kind of got wrapped into this whole thing so fast, I just wanted to just take advantage of being here, meeting you, meeting Dave, just having a good old time.
Excellent. Okay. And you're welcome here. We're happy to have you guys. Yeah, Dave is, yes, right on. Let me just tell you about Dave Slusher. Where do you live? Is it?
Conway, South Carolina.
Conway, South Carolina.
Is that
a red state? Yes, it is.
Dave was kind of the first guy that we were cross-podcasting. He caught on immediately, and I can't remember how probably through a referral log or whatever, and then I was like, whoa, here's a guy talking about hurricanes and how I was really worried about what was going on. And it was so personal, but we started doing this almost like at a real radio station, and it used to be that way, where the jocks would talk about each other and the morning guy would talk about the midday guy coming up and, oh, did you hear the overnight guy? And so we were having this conversation and I think the actual term podcasting, you figured out that we should... Well, explain who's sitting next to you, and why don't you tell us about yourself and how you got into podcasting?
Okay, well, I'm Dave Slusher of Evil Genius Chronicles, and So I just happened to be, I've been reading Adam's weblog for a long time, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time to get in early. I already had the stuff in my house. That's what gave me like a week head start on everyone else. I already had stuff. Because I had produced, I had been in radio before, and I had produced a show that was syndicated in public radio, like from my house, literally. And so I've kind of been through the whole, you know, getting into the actual big, or not big, but public radio system as an independent producer, which the barrier is lower than you would think, but it is a barrier. And so I have been through that. And so the notion of kind of the almost no friction, or very low friction, very low barrier to entry for doing a very similar kind of thing just really appealed to me. And so when I listened to the first couple of Adam's Daily Source Codes, I more or less, I said, I think in the very first one, there's a great quote from Rick Nielsen of Cheap Trick for bands. He said, when you first start doing a band, pick a band you love, find their most obscure songs, and cover them, and everyone will think they're yours.
I remember you saying, I remember
no
that.
No one will know the song, and then you find your own voice while you're slavishly imitating them, and eventually it'll come out and it'll be different and it'll be you. And I kind of think that's what happened, is my first, I don't know, 5 or 10 were more or less the junior varsity version of Adam's show. But over time it's kind of become different, and I, you know, we're doing different sorts of things now, and so it kind of worked like it was supposed to. But, you know, so that's just, you know, I have, over time, Dana Greenlee from Web Talk Radio actually, in one of the discussing this show, mentioned that I sounded like Ira Glass. And until she said that, I hadn't realized that I probably actually am, because I'm a huge fan of that guy. I think that's maybe the most brilliant show in the history of public radio. At This American Life. Which it's hard to remember now because we've been soaking in it for almost a decade, but it was so different when it first came out. And so that's actually kind of the direction I've been trying to take things, and without probably really realizing it. But what I like about that is it brought kind of a personal connection to public radio that maybe hadn't been there. And that's what this is all about to me, is when I listen to whomever it is, I always feel more of a personal connection from engaging in their podcast. Even somebody like you, who I've been reading your text for years and years, I feel more connected to you when I listen to one single episode of your show than I did for a year of reading text blogs, because I hear your voice. You know, I feel like there's more of a person at the other end. And so that's what I like doing. I love the fact that I've talked to 15 or 20 people who like feel like they know me since I've been here. Mm-hmm. And I, vice versa. I feel like I know people. I feel like I know Mike Butler. I've never met the guy, you know?
It used to be that way also in radio.
You would
intimately know your favorite DJ. You know, you would intimately know all about him because he could talk a lot more freely. And I think that's, it's a lot more of the reality of life that's getting back into that. I agree. I just want to briefly explain how podcasting came about, because that's, I just want to make sure that that's really clear, because it's an interesting way it happened.
I'm sitting next to Danny Gregory, who I'd like to make sure everyone realizes is a brilliant bastard. And he's the guy who coined the term podcast.
All right, Danny.
He's the guy who coined the term, and a few of us started running with it. So either the credit or the blame goes kind of towards this end. I tend to think it's credit. Certain people think it's blame. But I just saw a referral. So you had coined the term and registered the domain, and I saw like a robot hit my weblog. I'm like, podcast? What is this podcast of which you speak? And then he used the term on the iPod or dev list, and it's one of those kind of, it's like it hit the resonance energy, and it just made everything vibrate perfectly. And so we had been talking about a lot of stuff, and we all knew what we were talking about, but none of the terms like plucked the string and, you know, made a note.
Yeah.
And that was the one. And you'll notice that we talked about, Steve Gilmore had been talking about the iPod platform, and everyone kind of knew what he meant, but once you had this like sexy term, an explosion happened in kind of the, I tend to kind of think there's something causal there, but there's an argument that can be made either way. But that's where the actual word came from.
Podcasters like to talk. It's really good. thank you very much, Dave. I was going to call on Steve Gilmore, actually. Steve, could you raise your hand or stand up? Thank you. Can we get a microphone? You may or may not have heard the Gilmore Gang, which you can find through yes. You can find that through itconversations.com. Doug Kay, who runs and produces and does everything, is up there at the back. He's also working on our webcast. Thank you very much, Doug. If you want to jack in, by the way, there's plenty of connectors. But Steve, the Gilmore Gang was around before the iPod functionality came out.
Yeah, it was all my idea, basically, this whole thing.
We knew that, Steve.
And I just want to point to another member of the Gilmore Gang in the third row, Doc Searles.
Searles, yep.
So what do you want me to say?
Well, I'd like... just want you to take credit for inventing all this, Steve, that's all.
Okay, well, my job is done.
Tell me what has happened since you started with the Gilmore Gang, and now we have what you call the iPod platform.
Well, you know, there was an interesting evolution of the Gilmore Gang. When I first started talking with Doug Kay about this, how long ago was that, Doug? About 6 months?
6 months?
I don't know. 6 months? Doug was doing, as you can see from his IT conversation site, he was doing a lot of transcripts for the performances that he was putting on the network. And so we had a couple of transcripts cut of the first few Gilmore Gangs. And I read them, and, you know, first of all, I had to... I think they went off to India, so it was an interesting version of English that came back. And so I just didn't want to do the work of proofing it. You know, it was basically I was lazy. But over time, we started watching the characteristics of the relationship between streaming and downloads. And almost from the beginning, the downloads outnumbered streaming by 2-1. So this was the beginning of a hint. And I kept, you know, Tim Bray once IM'd me and said, you know, that he just didn't have time for the Gilmore Gang, and, you know, that it was, you know, an hour and, you know, maybe 10 minutes, you know, whatever. And I sort of, at that point, made it my goal in life to make it as long as possible.
Yeah.
And one time we had Brendan Eich, who's the architect of Mozilla, on. And the next day, Tim calls me, doesn't even IM me, calls me to say, and he wrote this long post about, you know, obviously he'd been trapped into this discussion because it was all about stuff that he was interested in. And from that moment on, we had him. So we're never going to do any transcripts on the Gilmore Gang. And essentially, that is the, you know, the capturing the attention, the voice, as you've done and as Dave has done, you know, and as Dave Slusher and Don and Drew. I mean, the cast of characters is already beyond what we can consume, you know, and have real lives. So, you know, I think we're poised for the next generation of this, which is where we figure out how to be able to mine attention and tag and provide metadata on these feeds. Because from my perspective, and I know this is, you know, may not be, I know there are people like Dave Weiner who disagree with me, I think, but I see the blogosphere as an annotation for the podosphere. I think that's where the metadata is going to go. I think that the information that is in the blogosphere is going to be used to reveal the opaque network of the podosphere that is emerging here. You know, how you find out about what is interesting, who is interested in what, the kind of conversation that you're having in the podosphere between Dave Slusher and Don and Drew and all the people that you're putting on your show for the first time. You're the Alan Freed of podcasting.
Is that a compliment, Steve?
We'll talk about that later. You know, that's an old reference, but Alan Freed was, you know, sort of considered to be the reason that the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is in Cleveland is because Alan Freed was born and grew up there. So this was a disc jockey who basically promoted a bunch of very small bands into a revolution. So what we're dealing with here, I was just saying to Nick Bradbury, who's one of the author of Feed Demon, which is now supporting podcasting, by the way.
Right on.
And I was saying that we're listening and we're sort of thrilled to see we're in the same room with Don and Drew, but seriously, this is the beginning of, we're going to look back on this not very long from now and realize that all of these players, all of us in this room, in this space, pardon the expression,
it's okay,
are the next generation of the media. This is the new media, and it's being born right now, and this is a seriously big wave.
Did Michael Butler make it in? Stand up, Michael. This is Michael Butler from the Rock and Roll Geek Show, everybody. Something that Steve said, I obviously want to lead into to music and as it relates to what we're doing with podcasts. It's great to be in a law school to be able to talk about that. I don't know if we need to go deep into stuff, but Michael has been in a band for about 7 years, I guess, called American Heartbreak.
Yeah, I have all my CDs here for you, too, by the way.
why don't you tell us about yourself and how you got into podcasting and what's going on?
I stumbled across your site just goofing off one day, avoiding my wife. And I'm really in the doghouse right now, too, by the way.
I got your email. Everything okay?
We'll see how it is when I get home. But anyway, so I stumbled across your site and saw that you did an audio blog. So I said, hey, that might be kind of cool, because I was doing a blog for a long time. And I always want, every musician probably thinks they're a DJ and wants to turn everybody on to their music. So I just tried it, played some music I like, figured I'd throw my own band in there occasionally, and here it is.
Has it... done it? Have you gotten any response? Has it done anything for you or for the band or for your music?
Well, my site's been shut down a couple of times for too much traffic, which is, I guess, kind of cool. A lot more people have been showing up to the shows, get a lot of emails. So you've been plugging me. I appreciate that. So.
Well, it's good stuff.
Right on.
And this is something that's a conversation that's going on about just about music in general. And are there any other radio people here who, right there? We can pipe up anytime you feel like it. Radio, to me, is, I'm going to bring the mic over to Tony, has been the soundtrack to my life. So if I'm, whether, it doesn't even have to be music, but music is really works well in my brain. What we don't have yet, or what we haven't had with what we're coining non-RIAA music, or music that basically that with the creator's permission you can play and don't have to deal with a whole bunch of rights organizations and payments and legalese. Is it, yeah, you can go to GarageBand.com and surf through stuff and listen to it. Yeah, you can go, there's just a million places with great independent music. But to have someone you listen to because you like the show or you trust them or whatever you feel, to say, oh, and by the way, here's American Heartbreak, or here's Mo Jones. I know I sold at least one CD to Steve Gilmore of Mo Jones. It becomes a whole different feeling, and it's like your friend is recommending something to you. It's almost intangible, but it's starting to work so well, in fact, that my daughter, who's a weblogger, she's 14, she's a big fan of Good Charlotte. She has her weblog is landoftheyoungandthehopeless.com. And the opening band for the Good Charlotte tour is an unsigned band called Three Quarters. And she sent me the MP3. She's not a podcaster yet, but she said, hey, Dad, I'm talking to their manager, and you got to play this on your show. And think about what, and I'm going to. Even if it sucks, I'm going to play it. But that's really important. That's how hits are born. That's how music gets out there in the top 40 radio. You want to make sure that Z100 in New York adds the record to their playlist rotation at the same time Kiss FM in Los Angeles does it. Because then of course you'll pour some marketing on top and everyone's hearing it and it starts to all gel together. Tony,
I just wanted to ask you a question, Adam, because I think you know, I'm thinking about this idea of, well, users here really means producers, you know, the users of all this technology, of people who want to make a podcast. And almost every, for almost every podcaster I've spoken with, the road has led to you as the podcaster, because you sort of anthologized, among other things. You set a tone. You said, okay, this can be really personal. It's going to be about me. It's going to be about my relationship with my wife and my kid. It's going to be about my doing it out of my house. It's going to be about me standing up and walking around while I'm doing this, so that there was a very low buttock factor, you know, as well in the broadcast. You set a tone, but you also said, I'm going to collect what you're sounding like and play it back to you. So you made everybody feel that there was something that was possible that they could do that would make a personal connection. It's been very, very personal. And as someone from public radio, I'm really trying to think about this personal side. Do you think that there is something about podcasting that is going in a direction that is really different in terms of the kind of relationship that listeners want to form with a podcast, that public radio should be looking at? We see ourselves as content providers for thoughtful people, but we may not be thinking enough in terms of actually making direct connections with people and having people want to connect with the people in public radio.
I yield my time to the distinguished gentleman from Seattle.
That was good. That was good. That's like saying that it's like a blog, okay? Yeah. I mean, Adam, and it's also like saying it's like MTV. That's what Adam did on MTV, right? So he would get, the stars would come wearing knee pads to, you know, try to get him to play their song. And, you know, so he gets that, and he does it at sort of, you know, that's just his nature, you know? And to Steve, it is just like a blog. I don't see that there's a difference, okay? I do a morning coffee notes. I'm a writer and I'm a talker, both. And you get a different story when it comes out of the mouth than you do when it comes out of the fingers, right? But I've gone back to writing morning coffee notes now, and sometimes I feel like writing and sometimes I feel like talking, and I sort of just go with the flow, you know, whatever. And so I don't see one as annotating the other. And so when, Tony, you say that it could, like, you know, fertilize public radio, of course it could. And that's like saying that the New York Times should be a weblog. And the New York Times should be a weblog. And the New York Times will be a weblog at some point in the future. You know, why doesn't the New York Times have an archive? Why can't I see what the front page of the New York Times website looked like on a specific date? Is there any sense to not having that feature? Why wouldn't they want to have it? You know, but yet they don't. There's some reluctance to actually take an idea from outside of their, you know, they're very insular, and they want those ideas to come self-generated. But they'll do it at some point. They'll also put stories up in reverse chronological order, because it's a very sensible way to put up stories, right? So, yeah, you will distribute programs that are created in an amateur space. You pretty kind of already do, you know, in some way. And just the same way that, you know, a reporter for NPR or a reporter for a newspaper quotes people that are experts on what they're doing. It's just the same idea applied to a different medium. And I'd say that one other comment, that it's all going so much faster with podcasting because we don't have to wait for the traditional media to figure out what we're doing to carry our message, because we can do it ourselves, because we already have one, which is called the blogosphere. And the blogosphere carries the message of podcasting, and so this thing bootstraps up in 1/10, 1/100th the time that the blogosphere itself bootstrapped up, because we already get it. We already understand that the voice of an individual is a powerful thing, whereas there's sort of a sense in the professional world that they kind of know it, but they are in denial of it, and they need it as the security blanket, because that's all that's between them and being on the street, you know? So anyway... So, we, you know, it's kind of a way of thinking, I guess, is what, all I'm saying.
Can you just bring the mic up there? Because now people are getting into it. This is good.
Thanks. Chris Carfi from Half Moon Bay here in the great state of California. Question I have for the room is, how do we deal with the discrepancy between a podcast, which is forced to be listened to and absorbed in real time versus the written word, which can be scanned, which can be absorbed, and can be sort of self-filtered in a quarter or a tenth of the time as listening to something that you need to listen to at the rate it was created.
Well, I'll just grab a couple of things there. First of all, the iPod basically sucks for a lot of your problems because you can't fast forward and just, you know, jump ahead and jump back. So there's some definite interface issues. When I play songs on my podcast, I say, or not always say, but I should say 3 minutes and 30 seconds if you don't want to hear it. You know, just skip ahead. I shouldn't have to say that. It should be just a button that kind of does something like that. You want to try? You want to jump in here?
Yeah. Maybe this takes this conversation in a little bit of a different direction. My name is Cole Jolly. I work for IDC, and I'm a product manager. So I listen to problems, and I try to, like a Yenta, I try to match solutions to problems. And the constituency of end users that I listen to is a little bit different. They're not necessarily producers or broadcasters per se, but they're like analysts on Wall Street and bankers and people that work for large corporations that manufacture technology. And they have their own constituencies that they broadcast to. And, to this question, how can I put this? So podcasting, I got this immediately when I saw you talking about this in your conversations with Dave, and I listened to your show. It's the logical next step of RSS for me, which I've been evangelizing into Wall Street now for 2 years. And all of a sudden, they got it this year. Mm. Before, they didn't, they manage a lot of information all day long. They need something faster than real time. And to Steve Gilmore's point about metadata, that we're at this point where I need to be able to kind of index what you say and to crawl it quickly across all of these conversations and zero in like Google to the point where I can find, this pivotal information that causes me to make a decision, then I, an analyst, can turn around and podcast my analysis. I just got off of a call, with numbers being reported to, the analyst that listens to me, and they make decisions. They make buy or sell decisions that affect pension funds and economies.
Well, you just mentioned that. I just wanted to bring up
a little bit less different. It's different from music, but it's kind of the same thing, which is all about this relationship.
I wanted to bring up a podcast that I bumped into the other day called Earnings Cast, which is literally... It's literally all the conference calls of the quarters that, where the analysts call in and talk about the latest earnings. All of those are now coming in through podcasts. I'm not doing it, but this is clearly an issue that we need to
metadata.
Okay. When people wave frantically, you just got to go to them, I guess. That's it, right? Before you can always throw something at me if I don't see it. That will help.
Part of the reason I waved is I'm just so shocked because I'm doing earnings cast and you plugged it. But I do actually have something to say, which is a little bit more philosophical about what's going on here. I came home from traveling last week and my TV had been changed, and suddenly there were like five channels of national public TV, KQED. Why? Because it changed to digital and they've got more bandwidth. So they've got tons of content that they, on the analog, they could only get into, they only had one channel. Suddenly on digital, they could put five channels there. And so there's now five KQEDs on my TV. And I started thinking, podcasting basically means there's an unlimited number of channels.
Right.
And that's going to dawn on people real quick because bandwidth suddenly becomes meaningless. You can, insofar as you want to say something, you can. With the earnings cast, I was doing a job for a company, and I wanted them to listen to Google's earnings call because I thought they'd learn something from it. And they said, well, how am I going to get to listen to it? So I threw up a website and put it on for them to download. And then I thought, just a minute, I could do this for a lot more of these things, and I kind of did Ernie's Cast almost by accident. But I think the bottom line here is there's an unlimited number of subjects, content areas, and there's an unlimited number of bandwidth, and now there's an unlimited number of producers. So I'm not so much worried about having enough time in the day to listen to stuff, because I'll just listen to what I'm interested in. I do need help figuring out what's out there.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big deal. But I think the world's going to change really, really quickly, and the whole meaning of consuming all kinds of media is going to change very, very quickly now.
Right. Let's go down to the front here. He's been very patient.
Great. Don't touch the mic.
Don't touch that mic.
Okay, yeah, my name's Kieran. I'm just a user. My comment was, you know, it was 52 minutes into this discussion before a non-famous person got to speak. So if you're pseudo-famous or anybody would recognize your name in the room, it'd be great if you let a user speak for a while. But I just want to say one of the cool things about podcasting is now I started playing Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. And it has radio. Yeah, it's great. But the thing is, you get tired of the radio in San Andreas pretty quickly. So, you know, now I've started overlaying podcasting in. And my wife is my wife's a vegetarian. So, you know, I went to Adam's Directory and I said, okay, well, you know, she likes vegetarian stuff, so I'll start listening to vegan radio. So now I can play Grand Theft Auto and, like, you know, do drive-bys and shoot and stuff like that, as long as, you know, vegan talk is running in the background. And but it's, you know, so the thing is, you know, it's great that there's all these people in this room who have 5 days a week or 7 days a week to do podcasts, but, you know, I'm looking for a subtext to my life. I'm looking for people to talk about things that can interact with my life. So I hope people don't, you know, feel that they have to jump into podcasts and they have to do it 5 days a week. You know, what I'd love is to be able to put in a DVD and then put a, know that somebody watched the DVD with me and then, like, had a bunch of their friends just, like, chat about it as they were watching so I could listen to it. So start thinking about how you're going to plug yourself into people's lives so that you know we can use this podcasting medium to interact and provide a more personal experience to things we share in common.
That's great. Thank you. That's a great comment. I'm afraid now to say who's next. You know, is non-famous people here? Over here, don't mind.
I'm Joseph Palmer, and I have All the Words, a book of the Monty Python skits. So the answer to your question about whether the content has to flow at the rate you're reading it or the content should be vocal, guess what? There are different kinds of stories that can be told in different ways. So if you read, is your wife a goer? Know what I mean? Know what I mean? That isn't funny. Know what I mean? Right? So audio is good for things different than text. You can do things in audio with music. You can do things in audio with the pacing, the timing that you can't do in the text. And that's it. I'm done.
Yeah, and I'll just add to that. I think that we've been conditioned by what media is, what broadcast radio certainly is, to expect it to be a certain way. And it's very rare that you hear kind of burst out. We've forgotten what audio is all about. Audio is beautiful. You can do so many things with it. You can manipulate it in so many fantastic ways, particularly in the digital realm. I think we have a lot to relearn, actually. There? Oh, man, we're never going to get to all this.
I'm Andy Abramson, co-host of the World Technology Roundup on Ken Radio. We've been broadcasting on the Internet since 1994, 186,000 listeners. We've grown since 1998. We look at podcasting very interestingly. I look at it as instead of mass media, as very personal media, very narrow casting. It's not a matter of how many people are listening, it's who's listening. And that's what really matters, because whether you have the right 10 people or the right 10,000 people, that's the first most important thing about all this. Second, you have, as we talk about, we don't break the news, we fix it. I think what we're going to see here is a lot of correction and accuracy that the general media does not have. There really is no oversight.
Which plays into the weblog.
Plays into the weblog, and you have this feedback mechanism, which is instantaneous, or you have a feedback mechanism that says, I just listened to what you said 3 weeks ago, and we see this with our regular listeners now who correct us or point out things, and we play this little game of I love blogs, Ken hate blogs, and our listeners are the same way. Some of them like it, some of them don't. but you're very accountable, and your audience becomes your friends, your family, your community. And again, whether it's 10 or 10,000 or 10 million, we're in an era of one-to-one communication. We're in an era of where accuracy, focus, and targeting is all being made apparent by technologies like podcasting and being powered by streaming. So it doesn't matter whether you listen live, you listen on download, you listen streaming, you're hearing somebody's thoughts, and you have the ability then to shape your opinions and feedback. So
right. I totally agree. Just one thing I wanted to say, which also comes into the how do we consume all this information. If you're thinking about podcasting, we're already setting a whole bunch of rules that we shouldn't be setting, I feel. You don't have to create a show. It doesn't have to be an opening sequence, here's what's coming up. It doesn't have to be like what Dave is doing or Dawn and Drew or Michael. I would love to, like Earnings Cast, that to me was a real eye-opener. I'm waiting for a Wall Street analyst to record a minute every morning of here's the stock picks for today. I would love to have someone do a weather report, even though Pete Perdue did it for me once, of my hometown. So that in the morning, when I just go through all the new podcasts, eventually I'll get exactly what I want, and maybe even in the order I want it. No, and here's a weather report. So if you're thinking about doing podcasting, let's not get trapped into that it has to be a show. But I think what we're learning here is that what really makes it fun for everybody is exactly that. It sounds like you're having fun, like you're just the way you might write on your weblog. I think that's really important. Important part of what we're doing. Is anyone at this point who does not understand what we're talking about and is saying, help, I'm lost, I don't get it, what the fuck is going on? Sir, yeah. Please, take the mic to him.
I knew I had to give me the microphone. Sorry. One thing I think is kind of interesting is in the contrast here is that if you go on and listen to the people that basically grew up with the technology, you're still in the language formation phase of their existence, they actually go on and relate to the technology a lot differently than the old fogies, in fact, that a lot have been speaking. In particular, if you go on and listen to the guy that winds up overlaying vegan talk radio or whatever it is over a Grand Theft Auto thing, that strikes me, maybe I'm off here, as a fundamentally different experience than going on and podcasting out, financial reports every morning on stuff. One thing I'd be interested in getting feedback from, in fact, is guys, I guess the requirement is that they're under 25 and have been using a computer for at least 15 years. How do they go on and relate to the media? How do they go on and see this thing being used? And how does it integrate with their life day to day? That's kind of, I guess, an open question.
Yeah, does anyone want to tackle that? I'm not going to touch it then. Dave just gave me a note of paper. I'm going to get to that in a second. Let's just grab one more here.
So there's been a lot of talk here about, the need for annotation, the need for being able to find the good stuff. And so I think it's maybe important to consider from a user perspective what a user will expect to use all of these annotations. How will they consume them? And so one of the things I've been thinking about, by the way, I'm Brendan Wilson, forgot about that, is, if you consider blogging as sort of like an uncensored letters to the editor almost, right? Someone puts something up and everyone can respond to it. You can consider that podcasting with annotations becomes like the radio call-in show, Howard Stern on PCP. So I think it'd be really interesting, despite the limitations of, say, the iPod and what it can do, I think there's a possibility for more intelligence in the software on the client side to sort of pull down Adam's show, someone says, hey, this section's quite interesting, a number of other people add that interesting information, and then my iPod or software remixes it so I can either listen to the whole show, listen to the greatest hits that people said were interesting, or sort of listen to it with the interjections within Adam's show. He says this, and then, oh, so-and-so thinks this after it. That's what I would expect as a user, to be able to use this in a completely away from my computer, sitting on my iPod, but limiting the amount of time I'm spending on this.
Maybe you're a shill that Dave put there, but the note that Dave gave me was, how could the iPod work better?
Open standard Linux, allow cloud.
You want to say anything else with the microphone?
Sorry. Make it an open standard. Allow people to write third-party applications that'll run on the iPod hardware. I mean, I haven't bought it because I don't want to get locked into a fixed standard. I mean, last week, you know, Apple just chose to shut off some functionality. Yeah. I'm not going to buy into that.
Does anyone want to talk about who is not using an iPod but another MP3 player they think is better than an iPod? So I'd love to hear that. Go ahead.
Stacey Kramer from Online Journalism Review and paid content, et cetera. And I'm not actually using, I mean, I have access to a lot of different ways to do this, and I've started trying to, but I'm concerned about the fixation on iPod. And a little bit concerned about the podcasting name in that respect, because it leads people to the idea that you can only do this effectively with an iPod. And guess what? When you start to try and do it with all the other different things you have access to play MP3s, it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
I started just downloading things piece by piece from IT Conversations to take here because I couldn't figure out how to make it all work.
I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you're saying this, because just like I said my original iPodder program sucked, in general, I think most of the people who are working on these programs will think that there's a lot of work to be done. And hearing that from you is like, here's a great opportunity. We have to figure out how to make that better for you so that it does work. The name thing, though, it's unchangeable. Forget about it. It's out there. We'll never change that.
Well, I realize that. I think, though, that requires a little better education from people and a little better sense of removing the concept of podcasting from the hardware of iPod to a lot of people. The other thing I would just point out is not everybody is listening to this on portable players or on little, you know, little gadgets. I mean, I'm sitting here, I've got a pocket PC, I've got a laptop I was traveling with yesterday. I could listen to this on any of these.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's my phone has MP3 capability.
Right.
So, I would like to just encourage us to keep in mind the variants of platforms that people are using and not only think of this as a tiny mobile concept.
And excellent, because I totally agree with you. And there are, I think Steve Gilmore came up with a number of 650 million new MP3 players that are going to come into the market in cell phones. And what's really neat about cell phones is, they're connected. And they can be connected through multiple ways. I think you're absolutely right. And we need to work on that. So, this is where the developers should start to raise their hands. That one looks like a developer. Could you please...
Hi, my name is Mike Levin, MikeLevin.net, and I have a podcast called Podcast from the Swamp. One thing that we can do, everyone who creates a podcast, even if you're not a developer, you have to create the RSS XML feed, and you can put keywords in there, and that's how search engines work. So if you want your podcast to be indexed,
lose the mic there. Yeah.
If you want your podcast to be indexed and picked up by search engines, you could put, I guess you could call it a pod roll or something like that in there. You can name the topics that you cover, and then the search engines will pick it up. As far as the iPod and podcast moniker, I guess after a while we started calling photocopies Xeroxes. And, whatever, it's a catchy word. I think the important thing is that people understand what the word means. It's unfortunate that it's a brand name, but that's just how it goes. John Dvorak wrote an article kind of putting down podcasting.
Ooh. Oh, no, hold on. I want to say publicly, I agree with John Dvorak. It's not there yet for everyone. It is not easy. It doesn't work. Shit breaks. You're falling off the edge. We'll kick his ass later when we have it all fixed. Don't get me wrong. But I think he's right at this moment in time. Sorry.
Oh, well, that's okay. Well, I mean, he pointed out a couple of things about podcasting that, some podcasts, some podcasters look like they came from High Times magazine.
Where's the lighter click, everybody?
Yeah, I wasn't sure where he was coming from with that one, and that some podcasts may not be that interesting. Well, I don't know about that either. Anyway, I wrote a response to his article in PC World, But anyway, what I you know, the idea of pod rolling and adding keywords to your RSS.xml feed, I think, would really help add relevance to the podcast, because it's hard to search an audio feed. I don't think we have very good technology to do that kind of thing yet. So, but index, you know, keywords would help us approach that.
I'm just going to take this discussion for a second, because everyone's talking about, now we're getting into metadata and all these words that maybe not everybody understands. I just want to show something that I'm working on, which is basically the next crappy program that I'm going to throw out there, I hope. It doesn't work at all right now, but at least you can kind of get the idea as to what I'm doing. The iPodder directory, which I'm trying to help everyone, you know, we're all working together to build this out, is based upon OPML. And on the other side of the screen here, you can see my outliner, which is an outliner in radio user land. And that is literally the same as that. So if you go to, well, what's new is already open here. Oh, this is interesting doing it this way. And if you click on what's new here, then you'll see the representation of exactly the same things. Now, the point where it gets cool is that I don't own this directory. It's not, you know, I own the top level that I showed you, which is there, because I basically put some categories in place, but I'm not maintaining this entire thing. In fact, I'm maintaining very, very little of it at this point, because anyone who can create an OPML document, and just think HTML, you know, there are programs that'll do this, there are editors, it's not very complicated. You don't have to know a hell of a lot except how to just basically type and paste in links. They can become a part of this directory. So, just to show you, I wanted to go back to categories. Is this working? Okay, well, that's coming up, and I'll show you the categories here. So, anything that has this little arrow is basically a link to someone else's OPML. So if I were to open up health and fitness, I'm maintaining that, and here's a link to the RSS feed for that particular show. But if we look at the music node, and if I double click, you see that it's a link. So actually, just to show you that, get info, it's going to a guy in Holland, Hans van Raamt, and that's his OPML file. Now, in my outliner, when I click that, it's basically bringing that OPML file and everything associated with it, and it's going to expand it. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm no longer connected. It's not going to do that. But the way it looks over on the iPodder directory under music, oops, yeah, no problem, Michael. Here we go, music. Now you see immediately a whole bunch of subcategories which aren't necessarily maintained by him. We go into general, you'll see that because he has an OPML file and there's all kinds of, let's just call it metadata, rolling through this OPML file, stuff happens automatically, like the suggest a link is going to go to him and not to me. I'm just going to finish this one thought, because now I'm When I started to understand this and the power of having this completely distributed, that anyone can maintain a node, the amount of nodes and feeds that are being added is just astronomical. Sometimes it's 20 in a day or 30 in a day. It's really growing quite quickly, and it's just kind of all flowing up to the what's new portion. Yeah, it made sense for me to start to figure out what else we could do with OPML, and I started doing kind of a production console. And this is actually how I prep for my podcast. This is nothing more than a simple outliner. And under each node, I usually expand this by using the Apple key comma, because that's easier than, I need to keep my hands on the computer for starting music and stuff. So there's a link. If I click on that, it'll open up a browser. But there's other different types of nodes in here. And this is, I think, what people are going to be looking for. So if I expand this, this Rick Lyons, Stephanie DeBruzzo, that's the album title. If I open that, that's the actual song. And if I double click on that, it's going to, well, it'll open it up here. Hold on, it opened it here. It opens up this player, ready for me to go. All I have to do is hit the space bar. I don't have the lyrics, but you'll get it pretty quickly. So we could listen to that all day, of course. But meanwhile, you might have seen that I right-clicked on this song, and it brings up what I think is the metadata. Don't ask me how it got in there because I haven't quite figured that out. But it, so in my OPML file, I have, you know, the album artists, and then under ats is where you get basically a lot of the ID3 information. And it takes me zero effort to actually create this. I drop the MP3 files I want to use into a folder, and this just kind of opens up. I'm not sure what to do with this. I hope people who are in this room who are developing and thinking about this will look at it and figure out how we can use this. It, to me, it feels like I should be able to copy and paste a link into an outline, and you know, that should be able to bring in the source files from, you know, Michael Butler's shows, that I can actually just get the MP3 of the song that he was playing. Or it could be a browser link for that matter. So I just want to bring that up so people can start thinking about that. Okay, can we get a mic over there real quick? We have about 8 minutes left. Demo? Sorry? Demo? Okay. Well, let's just take that one comment then.
Hi, Adam. I'm David Sifri from Technorati.
Hey, David.
And I just wanted to, you know, to the point of people saying, oh, well, how do you do that? Those kinds of searches? How do you find, you know, this incredible wealth of information that's out there? So what we started to do is just, you know, looking at what are the podcasts that people are linking to. And actually, that's up there now on Alpha.
No, that's commercial
just,
plug.
I just posted it on my blog. Go to my blog and see it. Oh, I'm sorry. Like, I just posted something that talks about how people can get... I'm sorry, Dave. I didn't realize that, you know, the stuff on, you know, it's just another directory. All right, hey, no problem. Sorry for the, it really wasn't meant as a commercial message.
No problem. It's,
I was just saying,
it's good that we're learning the ground rules and reiterating them. So people want to see it. Yeah, sure. Hank Berry, you want to introduce yourself?
First of all, Dave Sifri's my hero, so you can say whatever you want to say. I think that a lot of energy is being expended on something that Apple can shut off relatively quickly. And I know from personal experience that the RAA doesn't like MP3 files. And I think that as the technology proliferates, there's going to be this question of are people going to support open MP3 files? And so I think somebody like FeedBurner should think about writing a client that'll go down on an MP3 player so that you can be assured that you're going to have some client software down there close to the portable device that will remain open, because I don't think you can rely on that connection existing for a long period of time. Sony has announced, of course, that they're going to continue to support, they're now going to support open MP3s on their devices, and people need to form alliances with people other than Apple in order to make sure this thing keeps going.
Can you just keep the mic with Hank? Because you said two things that freaked me out. One was Apple could shut it down.
Apple could decide that they're not going to support MP3 files anymore. They could very easily do that as the latest rev of the software.
But that doesn't shut down. I mean, MP3 players are rampant. It's not just the iPod.
No, I understand. But my point is that if you look around the room here, this is we have a lot of Apple materials here. The fact that people are using iPods, I'd say, for the majority of podcast listening in the world. On a portable basis, Is that, I mean, if I'm, maybe I'm mistaken about that.
I have to disagree. I don't think we have any of those numbers, really. We don't know.
Okay, then that's great. But I do think that there is this issue out there about MP3s and that people shouldn't rely on that being around forever.
We don't have enough time to go into this, but I strongly disagree with that MP3s are going away. I don't see that MP3 files. Maybe, no, I just... Hold on, just give him the mic, because he's...
Supported by the Apple platform and being supported by the Windows platform. Those are the two things I'm saying.
Where do you want to go? To Larry?
So I want to talk about a different kind of development that has to happen in this space. If you look at the history of the Internet, it looks something like this. Tech people have great ideas about how to make stuff work, and lawyers come in with hatchets and cut it apart. Right.
Yeah.
That's basically the life that Hank lived.
Yeah.
It's the life that I think we should design this system to avoid. So I think one important development, which I'd be eager to help begin, would be thoughts about how we can begin to wrap this so that it's impenetrable by the 20th century legal mind, so it can flow and develop in all sorts of ways none of us can predict without somebody saying that the RIAA lawyers have deemed this to be illegal and therefore Apple has to shut it down or Microsoft has to shut it down. So one part of the development is architecting the freedoms into this system to guarantee that it can be used in all sorts of different ways without requiring people that I train for a living to stand between you and the people you want to talk to.
Well, we certainly welcome your help on that. Hold on.
It's an hour and a half session on the law and blogging, and so we have a whole hour and a half to work on this. And I think there's just huge power between, like, if Adam and Larry could work together, and that being symbolic.
Users and lawyers.
Of communities. Well, there's, like, lawyers are, like, I learned this at Harvard Law School, is there's, like, good cholesterol, bad cholesterol. There's good lawyers and bad lawyers, okay? Larry is,
good
these are the good lawyers, okay?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, these are our buddies, so.
Okay, we have exactly.
Developers and users and lawyers partying together. Yeah.
Which is dull. Sorry, I'm an acronym guy. Okay, so I literally have 3 minutes, and people would like to see a demo. There's really not much to demo other than I brought my podcasting bag. And if I poured the, well, shit, there's part something from my hair. It's just for bad hair day. That's but literally, I just brought out the pieces that I use. It's kind of like show and tell in third grade. What a big part of what makes the source code different is I can walk around. I'm mobile, and that's actually the almost non-podcast or non-blogger type piece of equipment I have, which is this. This is just like this one. It's a lav mic with a transmitter, and this is the receiver. It's very expensive if you want to get these that really work very well. This costs $2,000 easily. I mean, yeah, it's this is. We did a reality TV show, and I basically kept this. So just to show you all the bits, and it's, you know, and we can talk about this. I'm here through Monday, and everyone can come up, and I'll show you what I'm doing. Literally, so this is your microphone jack. I put that into the microphone jack here, the line in. And after many, many, many hours of extreme sadness and crying and making up excuses and of lost shows that I tried to record directly to my hard disk, and I've used every single combination of programs I can come up with, it's just not safe. I think that a lot of people here have witnessed an hour's worth of recording and it's gone, your computer crashes. So I'm going to make a recommendation, which is not necessary. I wish it were different, but I have yet to see a PC that can reliably record audio, and you know, unless it's a high-end system where they probably give you external hardware, external drives. And that's exactly what I did, is I went out and bought the ugliest little MP3 player. It's called a Yep. I think Samsung makes it. And the orange and brushed metal is just totally doing it for me. It, it can take 256 megs of data, and you can also record onto it. So this has none of the playlist features or any of that stuff, and I guess that some chipset came out that, you know, these seem to be everywhere, and literally I just plug this into the headphone jack of my computer, and any sound I can create on my computer will basically be recorded to this thing. And then when I'm done, I can plug this into the USB, and there's the MP3 file, and I go through the also a completely laborious process, which would take me 20 minutes here to show you, of uploading it. You know, oh, I forgot to do the ID3 tags. I mean, there's all this stuff that we have no tools for creating podcasts. Now, the big difference with what I do and what most people that I'm hearing doing is I don't edit my show. I don't put the stuff in later. I do it all live on the fly, which is kind of like playing Nintendo. It's hand-eye coordination. And it's true. So we can, you know, go back. So basically, I just open up my microphone and just switch it on. And while I'm talking, you see what I'm doing now. It's kind of tougher to do it looking at two screens. And I hit the space bar, and I can control the volume. You see I'm controlling the volume there by holding on the Apple key and the up and down arrows. And that's basically my fader. If you work in radio, you know, there's a slider there you can pull up and down. And then if I want to go to the next thing, which would be this, you know, I can have these queued up. I can have them. In radio, radio stations have what we call cart machines. We used to have what we call cart machines, which are basically jacked up 8-tracks with a continuous loop, and you put a song on it or a commercial, and then when it's over, it's queued up and it's ready to go. So this almost looks exactly the same when I look at it. So I just crank up the volume on this, and perfect. It's 10:15. That's the end of the podcasting session, everybody.
You've been listening to the podcasting session from BloggerCon 3 held at Stanford University on November 6, 2004. My name is Doug Kay, and I hope you'll join me next time for another edition of IT Conversations.